power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign Technica podcast feed.
Who, the man of tomorrow, the Golden Stallion? Sobzu, the rated R radio star, Dr. Brian Sovereign, here to talk. It's a tale of four events that really, I mean, did Samsung throw something? They must have, and I missed it. You know, pretty much every tech giant, or as we call them here, the Sinister Six, almost every tech giant held a major event over the past month, we'll say. And we're recording in October 2023 here. We had, of course, the big one from Apple that everybody waits for, you know, for the announcement of their yearly iPhones. We also had an event, kind of a Surface and AI event, though really it was more of an AI event, from Microsoft. We had a devices event from none other than Amazon. I know, why would you care? Well, we'll talk about it a little bit. And we had what a lot of people, I think, see as the response to whatever Apple is doing. And that's Google's, now infamous 10-4 event. Or they call it the Made by Google event now, since that branding has been around, I want to say since the Pixel 6 came out. And of course, this time we're talking about the Pixel 8. And let me tell you, sitting through all of these, all of these events, quote unquote, from Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, it can be a bit of a sleeper. So what do I do to get through these things? Well, don't worry, we'll get it. We'll review the Pixel 8. We're going to review them all. But what do I do to get through these things? I reach for my magic mind, my box of magic mind, and I get one of those shots right down. And when you have so many of these presentations to get through, you don't have time to be taking in mushroom compounds one at a time, taking ashwagandha one at a time, taking all these things, all these great natural ingredients one at a time, which I normally would do, but ain't nobody got time for that. So what do? Like I said, I grab some Magic Mind. And, you know, for me, the best part is you don't get that coffee crash. And it's more about just having a clarity of thought. And boy, do you need that when you're getting the amount of details and your eyes are just glazed over from whatever Apple is saying the iPhone 15 can do, or the fact that the Pixel 8 can now take your temperature. We're going to talk about that. But the fact that you just have that clarity of thought, that focus as you're going through this, so you can get all those details, and then you don't get the coffee crash, because I got to lay off that stuff. Yeah, I grabbed some Magic Mind, and I've been taking it for a few weeks now, and I'm really enjoying it. And I don't know how I would get through all of these tech events if I didn't take it. So I jump on it. I want you to jump on it too. And here's the deal. Okay, I like this so much, I got a deal for you. Go to magicmind.com/sovereigntechnica. Okay, magicmind.com/sovereigntechnica. SOVRYN tech NICA. Okay, so hit that, go to that link. And then if you want to get up to 56% off, okay, only if you use this code in the next 10 days from when you hear this, use the code SOVEREIGN20, SOVRYN20. Use the code SOVEREIGN20 and you'll get that hookup. And if you use the code SOVEREIGN20 at any point afterwards, you're going to get 20% off your order. So I want you to check this out. MagicMind.com/SOVEREIGNTECHNICA. Use that code SOVEREIGN20 and maybe you'll be able to stay awake and focused during these events just like me. Now, let's get talking about them. Why don't we start with, I guess, what a lot of people would argue is the biggest one, that being Apple's event. The star of the show here, ultimately, is, you know, the iPhone. And in this case, we have the iPhone 15, the iPhone 15 Plus and the iPhone 15 Pro. Of course, and you know, the iPhone 15 Pro Max, right? We have these major models, which has become more or less a standard. I think some people were expecting a lot of the predictions that I had heard going into this really ended up being wrong. A lot of people were expecting different nomenclature. You know, they were expecting a different naming scheme. Some people are even expecting an even more premium device than the Pro Max, or that the Pro Max would be this new premium device with a new name like Ultra or something like that. Not to say that Ultra's, you know, out of left field or anything, because, you know, the other device mentioned at this event was, or well, there was the entire Series 9 of the Apple Watch, but that included the Apple Watch Ultra 2. We'll get talking about those, okay? Trust me, get through all of these events with me. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on each because there is really an overarching point, a theme to be had here and to be explored. And that's what we want to get to. So the Apple event for September 2023, again, started off with the iPhone 15 series. The big thing, and look, let's just call it, okay? Yeah, there was some interesting stuff to be made, or interesting things to be explored about gaming. I mean, kind of the main theme with everything besides the Pro Max was that, you know, like features that were part of the, say, the Pro or Pro Max for the iPhone 14 series basically trickled down, like Dynamic Island and whatever, basically trickled down into the iPhone 15. That seems to be a running theme where these premium features, you know, are kind of exclusive for a year to the Pro series, and then, you know, they get their discount and are available to everybody else. So bragging rights end or what, I don't know. But regardless, one of the things that might stay in the Pro series, particularly maybe even the Pro Max, you know, would be the optical zoom, right? The telescoping lens, which is an impressive feat that they pulled off. Using like a, not a tetrahedron, but using a very specific shape for the lens, it allowed them to pull this off. Now I've seen, okay, so 5X optical zoom, sure. Now they're finally catching up to technologies that honestly Google with the Pixel series, Pixel Pro series particularly, and Samsung have been putting into Galaxy phones for years, okay? So they finally, you know, are catching up with that. Granted, the aperture is better on the iPhone. And I've seen varying tests done, not by Apple, because you're not going to trust those, but varying tests done that really show the iPhone 15 Pro Max still takes the best pictures when compared to, say, the Galaxy, you know, the Galaxy Ultra S23, you know, as well as the Pixel, you know, the Pixel 7 series, because the Pixel 8 series, well, might be shipping by the time that this was released, but regardless, you know, it's still owning as far as cameras. But here's the main point I want to get into, and that is really the only changes that happen with smartphones, minus a couple of odd features that we'll talk about, and I've already mentioned briefly, but that we'll talk about during the Made by Google event. The only thing you really change with smartphones are cameras. That's really it. That's really it. Now, I'm not even necessarily saying that's a bad thing, because clearly Apple knows this. They know it's their bread and butter. It's the bulk of the feature set that they did. It's one of the main ways that they justified their transition to USB-C in the iPhone 15 series, which was the right move. Was it due to, and you know, we got to be fair here, okay? Because a lot of people are like, oh, well, they did that because, yay, yeah, the European Union really put pressure on them and all that. No, Apple doesn't care. They could have delayed this whole thing, you know, this whole mandate that, you know, devices have to have USB-C ports. They could have delayed that for years if they wanted to, but they didn't want to. You know, Apple doesn't do anything really on a whim like that. They'll announce things, you know, way ahead of when they will release, but also know they've usually been working on anything that actually gets released. They've been working on them for years and years and years. And that includes USB-C. It's not like they didn't, you know, the USB-C was some unheard of thing to them, right? I mean, they already had it in varying iPad models, right? Like my iPad Air 5th gen has USB-C. So it's not like they didn't already plan on USB-C and the advantages of USB-C, even within iOS or iPadOS in that sense. Anyway, okay, so they had this plan for years. Just being fair, like, understand that Apple really did not need to cave into pressures necessarily from the EU. Okay. Would they need to cave to pressures from China? Yeah, yes, they would. And that's a very different story, partly because of production of, you know, much of Apple products within that country itself. And so, you know, those are very, and you know, and you gotta be fair on that too. I'm not being an Apple apologist here. Okay. I'm just saying there's the reality of these situations. Reality is, in China, engineers, designers, builders there are so far and away ahead of, honestly, their American counterparts, or their Western counterparts, if you want to say that, whatever that means. They don't have a choice. Okay? Like, this idea that somehow, oh, you know, yeah, production and design and all that, like, happens in China because, oh, you can pay their employees dirt cheap wages and stuff like that. Like, that hasn't been true for a long time now. That's not what's going on. I'm not saying the working conditions there are good or great. I'm just saying that's where the talent is. And the talent is not in the United States. We got to be clear on that. Okay. I mean, even companies like, say, Google, where, you know, the bulk of their Pixel series largely gets developed in Vietnam, or Samsung, where it gets developed in, no surprise, South Korea. Notice that's still in that general area. That's because that's where that skill set really resides, is in Southeast Asia overall, not necessarily just China, but it's definitely there. So, you know, no sympathy for the devil, but there you go. Okay. Anyway, yeah. So the iPhone 15 getting USB-C, great. They even did a little update on the AirPods Pro 2 case that allows for it to have USB-C. Nice. Great. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of USB-C and all of its capabilities. My main hope, this is somewhat capable as I understand it, but my main hope is that this implementation of USB-C into iPhone will allow for the use of, you know, a proper desktop akin to Samsung DeX. I want to see that on Apple's end, you know, even if it's using Stage Manager, which has gotten a little bit better with iOS 17 or iPadOS 17, I should say. So, you know, I'm kind of hoping for that, but that was the big deal. Okay. Regardless of the USB-C, which, again, they even sold that as being about photos, taking photos and transferring photos, you know, like raw photos to your Mac. It all comes down to the pictures. Apple knows this. And again, what I was going to get to earlier, it's almost a good thing. Why? Because then what Apple is doing is improving the back end. Okay. The hardware has in some sense become boring. And so now you need to do interesting things, more interesting things with the software, which Apple has been doing. For example, you know, around security and privacy. And really, like there's some parts of the messaging from Apple about privacy that are bullshit, but then there are things that are absolutely true. You know, advanced data protection, phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Industry fucking standard. Lockdown mode, industry standard. I mean, these are great features as far as security and privacy go, amongst a million other things that we could talk about that. Yes, they're baking into Apple services like iCloud. Okay. But that's all right, because at least I'm glad that they're doing it, as to where most other companies are not at all. And it's going to become ultimately their differentiator, which plays into kind of the larger theme that we're going to get to in the end here, in that you're going to see as we go through this, all of this hardware is ultimately boring. What really matters now is, what does the ecosystem provide for the user's personal thresholds? Okay. Whether it's security, privacy, AI, whatever, it's all going to come down to that. It is no longer like, yes. Okay. I mean, and for example, you know, with iPhone 15, they showed off some amazing gaming capabilities with that. And Apple has come out and said directly, yes, we want the iPhone 15 to be the ultimate gaming console. And that was very particular words that they used, which is interesting. But they showed like ray tracing capabilities and all. I mean, just wild, wildly advanced stuff. And it's impressive. And they're coming out with AAA games. I mean, AAA like console-esque games for iPhone 15 over the next year. And I might talk about that at some point because, as you know, like I identify first as a gamer. So yes, those capabilities are there, but ultimately, you know, Samsung can make a great case for the Galaxy series, you know, being an excellent gaming console, particularly when you include like Xbox Game Pass, you know, among other things. So yeah, the hardware, everybody's neck and neck. You know, and there's no real advantages like great speed advantages or anything along those lines. When you compare, you know, iPhone to, you know, to Android devices and whatever else, it really just comes down to what services are on offer with these devices. I mean, yes. Okay. So the iPhone 15 wins camera competitions. Okay. And you know, there's some value in that. But to some degree, I think each camera has differing advantages, right? Because like night mode, as in the ability to take a bright picture with low lighting or no lighting, is, you know, is something that still, as far as I understand it, Samsung as well as Google's Pixel series does better than iPhone. Okay, so you know, it can become a matter of degrees on all of this. Okay, but the bottom line is, all of these devices are capable of handling all of these capabilities. Part of the reason that Google puts a lot of what used to be Pixel exclusive AI features relevant to photography, they put them anywhere. Anywhere you have Google One, they will put it on. Like, so if you have a Google One subscription and you install the Google Photos app on your iPhone, you can use Magic Eraser. You can use all these different things. I think it's a bad idea on Google's part to not have exclusives, but it just proves the point. All these devices are pretty much capable of the same thing. So it becomes a question of, and I'm kind of getting the cart before the horse here because this is the point I wanted to make at the end, but I'll make it here and we'll still talk about some of these other devices. The ultimate point is what ecosystem do you want to be a part of? And how do you decide which ecosystem to be a part of comes down to, what are your thresholds? You know, what level of security do you want? What level of privacy do you want? What AI features do you want? And so on. Okay. And we're not talking about AI in any kind of Skynet sense. That's horseshit and never going to happen, or likely never going to happen. Okay. We're talking about AI features more in the sense that it's something that the device does that improves the content that you are trying to create. That's all we're talking about here. Okay. So moving right along. The Apple event, nothing innovative there, very iterative ultimately. But like I said, that's okay because it causes Apple to improve their services overall, which is really what they want, right? The idea is to get people to pay for a subscription, whether it's Apple One, Google One, whatever. They want you to be paying for a subscription of some kind. Okay. And Google One, I mean, in fact, that is the answer. Why would Google take some of its Pixel exclusive features and make them available on other devices, even the competitor like Apple? The reason they would do that is because they just want you to subscribe to Google One, even if it's only $2 a month or however much. If you get the lowest plan, that's still some guaranteed money that they could be bringing in on a regular basis, not reliant upon them coming up with a new service or a new device. That's why they would do that. Okay. So, anyway, we did have the Series 9, series of Apple Watch, as well as the Ultra 2. Nothing too, you know, groundbreaking here. In fact, a lot of people have brought up that the Ultra 2 is very little different than the original Apple Watch Ultra. Of course, the jokes are going around about how the Apple Watch, particularly the gold Apple Watch, is you know, the original Apple Watch, remember they had the gold version, like it was literally made of gold and everything, that is basically a hunk of junk now because it no longer gets software updates or even security updates. Which, would you wear a computing device that doesn't get security updates? Not if it connects to the internet, I wouldn't. So, yeah, I mean, that really runs into a problem. And I don't imagine Apple's ever going to really get into that game again. I think they were just trying to court a lot of the higher end watch fans, you know, as in fans of watches, not of Apple Watch necessarily, but watch fans. You know, you're trying to get in your Rolex crowd, really. But I think they've come to realize that's not what the Apple Watch is really for. So I wouldn't say there was anything really groundbreaking here as far as Apple Watch goes. I've made the statement countless times that there really is only one smartwatch, okay, and that is the Apple Watch. So they have this market owned. I mean, yeah, Google comes out, in fact, they did. They came out with the Pixel Watch 2. So what? it's nowhere near as feature complete as the Apple Watch. And really nowhere near as powerful as well. You know, this is a category where there is some competition. The only real smartwatch, I think, is the Apple Watch. And Apple has an interesting relationship with the watch. And, you know, some of the things Tim Cook has commented on and said, you know, he has claimed, now you could say that this is marketing, but I think it's also a glimpse into what Apple wants as the future. Tim Cook has said in the recent past, that he thinks, you know, people constantly looking at their phones is a problem. And the Apple Watch is really the solution to that. And it's not uninteresting that a lot of times when you see pictures of Apple execs, it's very rare that you see them holding an iPhone. Honestly, it's even very rare that you see them, if not ever, you might have never seen it to date anyway, that they're wearing the Vision Pro, right? You know, the MR headset or whatever they want to call it. Anyway, you very rarely see them with that. But what they do always wear, you always see them using or wearing the Apple Watch. In fact, they'll even wear jackets, I think, that are hemmed a little short just so the Apple Watch really shows. And I think the Apple Watch is really the direction that Apple is looking at. And as I've talked about over the past decade on Sovereign Tech, you know, that's not a bad direction to go, you know, and I'm curious I could see over time where the watch takes over as the primary device, as that category over time. A lot of the features, you know, that they're baking into AirPods are really all, I mean, it could get to the point, I think, where the AirPod itself is, and I've talked about this before, where the AirPods themselves are the device, you know, but I think you're always going to kind of need an input. I think Apple would love it if the Apple Watch was the device, like that's what really took over, but we'll see, you know, jury will be out on that until it happens. Some of the motion features that they also included, that was not a new feature. That's something that's always been available in accessibility settings where like you can do kind of the shadow puppet of the dog barking, right? And that turns off that, or that, you know, that hangs up a call or can answer a call. That's not new to the Apple Watch. It's just now it's a feature. Now they're making it a broader feature and it's not just an accessibility feature. Okay. That's interesting, you know, and these kinds of hand gesture, capabilities, you know, we've seen these with like Project Soli from Google. It's something that I'm sure the tech giants would like to be more dominant over time and would really make the Apple Watch a more central computing device. Someday, perhaps, with enough hand gestures, someday more central than even the iPhone, say. You know, it's pointing in that direction. So anyway, why don't we go ahead and move on? That's pretty much the Apple thing. And I kind of told you where this is all going anyway, that the devices ultimately don't matter. It's, are you in with the services and the ecosystem? While we're saying that, let's talk about the Pixel series, okay? So Google had their Pixel event with the Pixel 8, now running the Tensor 3 chip, which we still got to see, you know, as their main SoC. We still have to see whether or not, you know, that's going to live up to the hype in any way, or if it's really going to be meaningful. It could be, you know, a lot. I mean, I've been impressed. I was impressed with the first Tensor processor. And I mean, I used the Pixel 6 for years. Well, I mean, it's only been out for, you know, a few, but I've been using it that whole time. And, you know, I've always been pretty impressed with it. But as far as like meaningful updates to the platform, well, we'll see. And I mean, that's just as true for iPhones, right? Like, yeah, okay. I have an iPhone SE3 that has the A15 in it, right? And I've used past iPhones. And like, I've never felt, oh, holy shit, my iPhone is just too damn slow. I can't wait until the A15 or the A16 or the A17 comes out. No, it's not really a problem. Okay. But you know, to get people to upgrade, you have to make meaningful improvements with that. Right. Like how do you, for example, with Apple's AirPods, how do you get people to update from the AirPod 1 to say even, years later into the AirPods 3? Well, you do that by putting in like, say, the H1 coprocessor into it that will allow for, you know, Siri to do things with your AirPods where it can give you announcements and all these other kinds of things. You have to make meaningful updates to your chip to get people interested, okay, and to get them to buy in. And, you know, is the Tensor 3 really going to do that? Honestly, I don't think so. There really weren't any major meaningful updates with the Pixel 8 series, in my opinion, over the 6 and 7. There were some AI features showed off. Kind of the main new feature, I guess you could say, is that it's capable, the Pixel 8 is capable of taking the temperature of things, but you have to like hold the phone right up to the thing. And I guess it's not FDA cleared. I think they said FDA. It's not FDA cleared to be used on humans. I find this to be an incredibly strange feature and really seems like something they started developing during the pandemic. And now they finally released it. Do I think there's something nefarious in this? No, I don't really think that. I think it's just something. It's like a new feature that they could talk about, you know, that made it somehow different. But I could see this going wildly wrong. Okay. I mean, the ability to tell the surface temperature of something or the temperature of something, from a distance, you know, I mean, technologies that can do that have been around forever. Okay. Like really, you know, and it just uses like a laser and you could like point it up at the ceiling and you could tell the surface temperature of the ceiling. I don't know where this is going to sell anybody. Like, oh, wow, I can take the temperature of something. I'm going to know if something's too hot. And this is more of that really kind of nannying of people. It's like, well, how do you know if something's too hot? I don't know. You learn over fucking time, like a baby learns not to touch a panhandle. Like a you know what I mean? Like we're humans. We learn by doing. We don't. This idea that your smartphone is some kind of nanny that, oh, can help you. Oh, that's too hot. Like I am not a violent man, but if I saw somebody not willing to touch a pot or a cup of coffee or something like that, until they held their Pixel phone up to it, I might smack that thing out of their hands. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Okay. Rather, I would gently nudge their hand away and their phone very nicely. And then I would touch the cup and I would say, I think it's fine, Bill. Or I'd say, yeah, that might be too hot. But also, I'd probably never talk to them again. Because if they need someone or something to tell them, a grown goddamn man or whatever, that something's too hot. I don't know, man. I weep for the species. This is a dumbass feature. Okay. Now look, Pixel phones are great, but that was my point that I made earlier when talking about Apple. All of these devices are great. They really are. It just comes down to, is the ecosystem great? Is the subscription service giving you enough features that you want? And all that comes down to personal thresholds. Okay. The device events that are being held are largely meaningless. Because whatever is available at the time, you get that. I mean, and now, okay, one great thing about the Pixel 8 now is that it will get, 7 years, which even best Samsung gets close to the 8 years of Apple with iPhone support. 7 years of software updates, and that's not just security updates, that's full-on Android versions. So you're going to go into the 20s as far as Android versions if you buy a Pixel 8. All right, that's great, but that gets to my point that just, you know, what phone should I buy? I get this question. I've even gotten this recently, and I've covered it on Wednesday Q&As for Sovereign Tech patrons. Okay. What phone should you get? Just whatever the latest one is, you know, and just make sure like it has, the camera features you want or something, because otherwise all these things are the same. You know, as long as you're buying from Apple, Samsung, or Google, and I would only buy from those three. Okay. They're all of equal quality. And they all have great software support, which in the past has been my number one, thing to look out for with your purchase is how long is it supported? Because the software updates and those security updates are everything. Okay. So anyway, the Pixel 8 event, nothing really exciting. Fine phones though, really. I mean, I think the Pixel series is right on par. With anything that Samsung or Apple is doing. It's just a matter, again, it's a matter of what ecosystem do you choose? Okay, speaking of an ecosystem that I would not choose, two of them that I would not choose. Let's start off with Microsoft. So the Microsoft event in September, was it September 21st? Nothing special here. Nothing, no big deal here. In fact, everything other than a couple of hardware reveals, everything talked about was already talked about back in May of this year of 2023. Okay. So Microsoft Copilot, which is their implementation of, GPT-4, their implementation of Bing Chat, which is their kind of special sauce AI that uses GPT-4, right? Because they have such a heavy investment in OpenAI. This is, there was nothing new announced about it. And honestly, everything that Microsoft Copilot can do is totally unimpressive. I mean, you can tell it to change some settings here and there, but it's not necessarily to the point where it's automating so much of what you do on the computer. I mean, for Microsoft Copilot to be impressive, it should replace mouse functionality, right? And really keyboard functionality. And until it's really doing that on a large scale, it's kind of pointless. And it's just a way to get you to buy a Microsoft 365 account. A lot of this needs to be onboarded. You know, a lot of these large language models need to be onboarded to the devices themselves, which, Google was already in that direction even before ChatGPT became a thing. And you can tell because of the Tensor processor that they developed for the Pixel 6, because that was all about onboard AI. And that's because the server cost of running a lot of these LLM, large language models like ChatGPT, running LLMs and other machine learning is expensive. It's really fucking expensive. And so the more you can offload that, streamline that to work on the device instead of in the cloud, you're going to want to do that. Microsoft is running into the same thing, but they're baking all of this into Windows. So what do they need to do? They're coming out with a device that can handle that. Now they did mention the Surface Laptop Go 3, which should have been really cool. Basically think of it as an iPad that can run Windows Win32 apps. Like that should sell anybody, but whatever. They're looking at enterprise now for that. It was the Surface Go 4 that I'm talking about with that. And then there was also the Surface Laptop Go 3. A lot of these things are just being pointed at towards enterprise, which is where Microsoft makes most, that's the space where Microsoft makes most of its money anyway. So it's really not a surprise. The big winner here was the Surface Laptop Studio 2. Now we don't need to get into major tech specs. Okay. The only interesting thing here to look at is this is really the first laptop that has a PC, because all MacBooks, ever since the M1, have had neural engines. They've had, NPUs, neural processing units for AI. Apple hasn't taken advantage of that yet, but I would wait. I think Apple, because we're learning that what most people are doing with AI is just nonsense. Okay. Or they're finding out its limitations and the limitations are just too much, you know, to where it's practical. I mean, we know some of the subscriber reports for ChatGPT, and those numbers have dwindled exponentially, not increased, dwindled. I think Apple's going to figure out, you know, what best to do with AI. And we know they're on the hiring spree for it. And I could see where, you know, their devices, you know, Apple has that, like we talked about, that great software support. They have that. And so for them to be able to, you know, say next year, maybe make some announcements about certain AI features that would be like in macOS or even iOS, they can say, and this is available on every MacBook going back to the M1, you know, or on every iPhone going back to the A15 or the A13, A12, whatever. And it'll just blow people away. And so many people will be able to, you know, such a large user base will be able to access it. With PCs, very different story. NPUs are exceptionally rare. Okay, I know they're out there, but they're exceptionally rare. And really, Intel is going to finally implement NPUs into their, what we would call their 14th gen chips, but you know, the name is technically Meteor Lake. We don't know. There's been news of them, of Intel rebranding. So they might not call it 14th gen, but really the only 13th gen processor that has an NPU is in the newly announced Surface Laptop Studio 2. So if you are wanting a Windows-based machine that is really kind of future-proof, because the prediction is, and I think it's a fair prediction to make, that Windows 12 is going to be heavy on Microsoft Copilot. It's going to be heavy on the AI, as it were. This would be the computer to get, even though it's insanely expensive, and you'd probably just be better off getting a MacBook and waiting for you know, Apple to come out with their AI implementation, whatever that happens to be. Not only that, I mean, but just about anything that Microsoft is going to develop, you know, sooner or later, they're going to want to appease the Apple crowd, and they'll make it available on Apple. I mean, for example, the best implementation of Bing Chat, really the best implementation of GPT-4 out there, in my opinion, is in SwiftKey, Microsoft's Android and iOS based keyboard. SwiftKey makes it so simple. I use it all the time. You just hit the Bing chat button or hit the Bing button, and it'll give you the different options of what to do with Bing chat, and you can do all of it. And it makes sense on a smaller device. For example, if I want to write an email, okay, I can on SwiftKey, on my iPhone, I can instantly say, write me an email about X. And it'll do it. And by and large, I can just copy paste that. In fact, most of the time it is just a copy paste. Now, if I was on a desktop at the time though, I can type faster than Bing chat can think, really. So I would just write the email, you know. It's only advantageous when your input is inferior, than what the AI can provide. So in that sense, you know, Bing chat being built into SwiftKey, I mean, that's really where it's a winner. Every other area, I don't think makes sense. Bing chat is also great for, you know, as a search engine. Granted, if it's something important, boy, you want to fucking verify that shit, because if there's anything in this world you can't trust, it's AI. I said, can't trust. Don't ever trust. Can you trust humans? No, of course not. But, you know, like the old saying goes that I've espoused over the years, you know, to err is human. To really fuck up, you need a computer. Well, the computer is really going to fuck up. And human's just going to err. So anyway, because this is the thing, like the AI in getting asked a simple question will outright lie to you. You could argue maybe with the best of intentions because it's just doing what you told it to do, but it will outright lie to you. As to where a human yes, humans do lie, but in general, you ask somebody next to you something, they'll give you the best knowledge that they have. Again, the AI will straight up make shit up. That's a problem. So always verify, but it can be helpful for little searches. And particularly when it comes to like a lot of technical questions, like how do I do this on my PC? You know, it's great for that sort of thing, because it'll give you step-by-step instructions with no ads and all this. Is that going to kill a lot of websites? Yeah. But I say, fucking great. Let them die, as Captain Kirk would say. Okay. So, yeah, the Microsoft event, nothing really exciting there. The only thing interesting is that you do finally have a true AI-powered laptop in the PC space, you know, with the Surface Laptop Studio 2. And not a bad computer at all in the first place. But, you know, having that MPU available, okay, that makes it a little more interesting. But if you just wait until next year, you're probably in better shape. Anyway, I mean, the funny thing is, Windows on ARM, again, this is still an Intel chipset, okay, with the Surface Laptop Studio 2. But Windows on ARM has come a long way. Now, it's come a long way because of its use on M-Series Macs, not because of the PC industry. But I mean, the idea that future Windows PCs are going to be ARM-based, I think that's going to be a much more hardcore reality starting in 2024. Because I've tested Windows 11 on ARM, on MacBooks, and it's impressive. Which even gaming, it's impressive what can be done there. So it's ready, you know. I think for prime time now. And Windows 12, if Microsoft were smart. I mean, look, they should have stopped at Windows 10, but whatever, they're not. If Microsoft were smart, Windows 12 should be marketed as works best on ARM devices. Like, they should really market it that way, especially for the enterprise industry. But that's a whole other separate conversation to go into. Basically, you know, at the end of the day, all devices are going to be ARM-based devices going into the future. Is that a bad thing? You could argue that there's somewhat of a monoculture, because even then you have different ones, different designs. But in the end, getting away from, you know, x86 architecture that is susceptible to, say, two of the worst exploits in computing history, that being Spectre and Meltdown. Yes, I think that that's a great and wonderful thing. It's the reason I use my Raspberry Pi 4. Dare I say, religiously. I don't like using that word, but I did it. Okay. Speaking of another of the world's religion, that being Amazon. Because the world's religion really is consumerism, and Amazon is the king of that. And I've always known this, and that's why I've said, as we famously call it over the years, the Amazon World Domination Tour. Calling it before any other tech show even bothered to cover Amazon, because they thought it was just about selling books. Anyway, the sad part is their fall event, their September 2023 event, did not cover any Kindle devices, which are really the only devices that matter in the Amazon ecosystem, in my opinion. Everything else, the entire Echo line, it's all bullshit. It's all crap. Okay. It might get a little more interesting, and I'll explain why for a couple reasons, but the only thing I care to hear from Amazon is, okay, are you putting color e-ink into the Kindle Paperwhite or Kindle Oasis into your e-readers? Otherwise, I don't give a shit. Well, that's not what happened. Anyway, we got an Echo Show 8, which, oddly, you have to pay $10 more for it to be able to show photos to you. Literally, they call it the Photos Edition. That is so strange. But okay. And I'm sure they can get it, because in my opinion, for the Echo line, not the Kindle line, the Echo line is totally about appeasing the older crowd. And I don't say that with disrespect. I'm saying the less tech savvy, and perhaps the, kind of financially restricted, I'll put it that way. And I say that with kindness. I'm not saying that as an insult in any way. I've been there. Okay. You know, the financially restricted or, you know, fixed income folks. I mean, like, that's really what the Echo series is looking at. And that's a market to look at. And that's a market that I think should be appeased. Okay. But that's really what it's all about there. So they probably will dupe a lot of people, because at the same time, the Photos edition of the Echo show is to charge $10 more for that is a fucking insult. Okay. But they'll probably get it. Now, where the, and they had other, what do they have? The Echo Hub, which is a new series for them, which is all about, you know, building out the smart home, which Amazon is a major part of most smart homes, partly because they, you know, acquired Ring doorbell, you know, the Ring doorbell and all that. Anyway, where Amazon is going to get interesting, one is they recently, because he left Microsoft unceremoniously, they recently got their hands on Panos Panay, who was the head of Windows and Surface Division at Microsoft for years now. He might bring something interesting because he is a design guy and he likes to make wild shit. And so next year's event from Amazon might be interesting. We'll see. I don't know. But where they're definitely making a play is in AI. Okay. Because they just bought Anthropic, which Anthropic was a competitor for OpenAI. And in my opinion, Anthropic had, you know, with their Claude 2 engine, or if you want to call it an engine, anyway, their LLM Claude, I thought was the best of the best in the business. And I say this as somebody who has to use and test and build with AI on a daily basis, you know, as part of my daily work. I get paid to get this right. You understand? Okay. And I thought Claude blew away Bard. I mean, and look at the Pixel event, you know, at the Made by Google event, there was tons of announcements around what Bard is going to do. None of that excites me until Bard can actually deliver, you know, a meaningful product at the level of GPT, anything GPT-4 based or Claude or, you know, or like, you know, what Anthropic had available. But Amazon just recently acquired Anthropic and they're clearly, and they stated as much in their event, that they are putting generative AI and AI features into a new version of Alexa, into that backend. You know, they called it right out. We have a new LLM. Well, I mean, that LLM is going to get supremely enhanced by really what I consider to be the best LLM out there, that being Claude. So that we'll see. Next year, I think we could have a lot more interesting things to say about Amazon's device range. Okay, because otherwise it's all kind of boring. But considering the market that they go for, which is really the less tech savvy, okay, AI could be a real winner with that crowd. So, you know, for example, and this is the thing, and it's really showing, okay, I kind of made my points about it doesn't matter. Devices don't matter. Ecosystems are what matter now. All the devices are pretty much in run, you know, are upgraded and running in parallel, right? Like the none really has an advantage over the other. It all comes down to services and overall UI, you know, and usability. Okay. And you know, there's an old adage that, Mac or, you know, Apple products are for people who hate computers. I still think that's true. Okay. And I'll explain why. And I'll give you kind of a breakdown here. I think that Android is just affordable and Chromebooks are just affordable. So there's a market for that. Okay. For people who just need access to this shit. I think Amazon, the Echo line particularly, are for people who are not tech savvy. The Microsoft products are for those who are savvy, very savvy, which is why I think there's a lot of pushback on Copilot. Because it's like, well, I already know how to do this shit. You're not doing anything new for me. You know, like this is pointless. It doesn't impress me. Okay, as to where Amazon, the crowd they're reaching are the non-tech savvy. Doesn't mean that they don't, I mean, and yes, also those, you know, that may not have the affluence to buy Apple products. Okay, you know, it's kind of a, and I've made this argument before, it's sort of a poor man's Apple. Okay, that's not untrue, but I think there are different targets here in all of these, and AI will work differently in each. Okay, so I don't see AI being a huge deal for Microsoft, even though they're trying. I think their best use case, again, is in their keyboard for Android and iOS devices. I think with Apple, it's going to be popular. Look, because the argument that Apple products are for people who, and particularly MacBooks, are for people who hate computers. There was a time where I think that might have been true in the sense that people mean it. I think it's true now but I think it's true now. It's people who hate computers because they know them so well. Not because they just hate technology. It's because they just know them so goddamn well that they know that Apple is giving them the best options, or, you know, Apple is giving them the least amount of trouble. That's probably the best way to put it. Apple gives them the least amount of trouble. So, yeah. So the argument that Apple products are for those who hate tech. Yeah, I think that still holds up, even though now it's for somewhat different reasons. Now it's because you hate tech because, kind of like me, you know, I mean, and me as a, you know, kind of an Apple user, once again, you know, am I arguing that I hate computers? I sure as fuck hate modern ones. So yeah, I got an Apple, right? Because I know what computers are now. And so I guess I chose the least of evils anyway. So, but yeah, that's really where we're at. And so Windows, you know, I don't see AI being, they'll just end up copying whatever Apple does at the end of, you know, when Apple finally unleashes their AI abilities. Google, I think, is in real trouble overall as a company because they keep canceling stuff. We know that they're in a financial world of hurt. AI is ultimately going to eliminate their advertising business. And Apple will probably win that out because they'll likely implement the AI without ads being put into the search. Okay. Or not the search, but in the query window, right? Where you put in your, you know, you ask your contextual questions and all that. Because I see that coming. Where in Bing Chat, like eventually ads are going to pop up in Bing Chat. And that'll probably happen in ChatGPT as well. Unless you're paying the $20 version, then there better fucking not be ads in there. You know, and it'll happen like with Anthropic, you know, Amazon's model is all about ads and you're probably going to end up getting those there as well. And then Apple won't have ads and that'll be the one, like I said, that's the one that'll probably be the most interesting. Okay. But this, you know, AI in general, I think is actually going to kill Google. Not, you know, they're not going to evolve into it. It's going to wipe them out because it's going to make the Google search engine meaningless. The sad part is there's a dark side to that. I mean, in one sense, I love the idea of Google falling away. I love the idea of, you know, a lot of these ad-based search engines disappearing, but there is a dark side to that. And that is, comes down to, can you verify the information that you're getting from this AI? And that speaks to a point that I've made in the past about what's really going on here is the death of truth. Not Skynet, not any of this crap with AI, but really it comes down to the death of truth. So that's another conversation. I've had it in varying Wednesday Q&As in the Patreon only feed. And of course, go to sovereigntech.com if you want to find that. That'll take you to a page where all the links, all the places you want to find me, you can on Instagram, I'm all over the place. So you can find more there, including Patreon, including Medium, where I'm writing about a lot of this. So if you want to check all that out, go ahead. But I think you get what's going on here. It all comes down to ecosystem. The devices no longer matter, and that has never been more true than in 2023. Okay, it's what ecosystem do you want to buy into, not what devices you want to buy. And you choose. And I kind of gave you a metric. Do you know technology really well and now you hate it? Apple's probably the direction to go. Do you want to deal with, you know, things like AI and new features getting forced on you, but, you know, you still love tech and you've been in it for decades? Maybe Microsoft's your bag. Are you kind of income challenged? Again, I say that with respect. Maybe you want to be looking at what Amazon is doing. Maybe you don't. Just save your money and get something else. Okay. You know, do you not really care and you just want your Android device that just gets shit done and has impressive features? Yeah, then maybe take a look at what Google recently released. But honestly, I don't think the Pixel 8 has anything going for it that isn't in the 7 or the 6, and you could save yourself a lot of money just buying into an older series if you really wanted to, other than the software updates are nice. Samsung is one of those areas. I mean, they're not a dark horse. I mean, they sell more devices than anybody worldwide. but a bit of a dark horse in the sense that, you know, maybe, you know, you're really obsessed with smartphones and you just want smartphones to take over your entire computing world. If that's the case, really Samsung's the way to go because you do have access to DeX where it can turn into a full on computer. There's options here. Okay. But again, you know, what is your personal threshold for what you want? And that's the ecosystem, not the device. That's the ecosystem you're going to buy into. And then you just decide which device gives you the best access to that ecosystem. Right. And that's really what it's down to. It's an interesting year. It's a year, 2023, I think, is a year of tremendous change and realization and solidification of the tech world. This is one of those years. In fact, it's amazing. It's almost 20 years after, you know, I always say that the internet took over in 2003. Well, now I say the internet is effectively dead. I'll be doing an episode about that. But after 20 years now, essentially the effect of the internet has come to a head, and now, you know, we're at another crossroads. We're at another sea change, and it's a time to clean up your digital life. And 2023 is really where I think that choice needs to be made. And we'll explore this more in future episodes. But for now, again, really nothing exciting to talk about here. I hope I made that totally plain. It's really more a look at, okay, what should you do as the user going into the future? And what direction do you want to choose to go? So I will leave you with that, and I will see all of you, woo, on the other side.